Web Talk Radio is brought to you by Web.com, the most trusted name on the net. When you're ready to get on the web, visit Web.com for domain names as low as $4.95. Web.com offers full-featured web hosting, including online store packages, starting at only $7.95 per month. Web.com has thousands of .web.com names available at www.web.com. WebTalk is also brought to you by Replay Radio at replay-radio.com. It turns your PC into a sophisticated web radio VCR. It's a great way to enjoy listening to the radio. Record your favorite music and radio shows and stations, and then listen anywhere and whenever you want on any device you want. Get the free trial download at replay-radio.com.
Thank you for joining us from around the world. This is Web Talk at WebTalkRadio.com, and you're listening to The Internet's Future, and I'm Rob Greenlee again here on the microphone.
Good to see you again, Rob. One more show, one more week. I'm Dana Greenlee, and we're glad that you also joined us for another week of Web Talk Radio.
Straight ahead on the program this week,
how do you do everything with Google? Cable TV goes on demand.
New study on where web surfers are connecting. And in our digital mailbag, someone's selling ICBM nuclear missile launch keys on eBay. We also heard a lot from you about the pros and cons of broadband over power lines. And a listener takes exception to last week's segment on blogs' dirty little secrets.
A lot of people really love their Google. Nancy Blackman is one of them. She co-authored a book called How to Do Everything with Google, and she runs the very popular site GoogleGuide.com, which is chock full of some incredible but little known features that you can use in Google to make your online life a lot easier. Nancy promises to tell us all her favorites shortly.
My favorite feature is Google Answers, and I think it's a highly underutilized service. If you are having trouble creating your query or don't have time to research something yourself, you can ask Google Answers for help. It's a paid service, but you set the price, and the price can be as little as $2.50 and as much as $200. You will get assistance from a researcher, and the answers have been amazing, just really worthwhile.
It's time for a brief summary of what happened this week on the web.
Well, Dana, before we jump into all that, I wanted to mention a very cool search site called SeekScan.com, and I put a link to it up on our front page on last week's show, but I really spent some time with this website this past week, and it's really got some terrific tools, so I would really highly recommend that you go check it out. It's SeekScan.com.
Well, Rob, another thing that really made us all excited this past week was, personally, we turned on the TV as usual. We get Comcast Digital Cable. We have HBO. Mm-hmm. And the thing that surprised me was a new sort of little pop-up menu that appears on screen, and there was the words on demand. Well, when we've been hearing about on demand, we've been talking about it on the show. This may not be totally internet related, but it's time shifting related, and that's our buzzword these days.
We certainly like the whole on demand aspect. We do it a lot with our show, and it was really cool to see Comcast deploy this, because what it enables us to do is watch like HBO shows like Sex and the City and Sopranos whenever we want, instead of having to wait for the DVD or set our VCR to record it at a certain time when HBO is airing that particular episode. It was really cool, and I think it's really a glimpse into what we're going to see a whole lot more in the future is on demand. Demand media in all forms, whether it's radio or television.
And it's not just HBO, by the way, guys. So if it doesn't come, you know, it's like all these digital cable programs, not regular broadcast TV, I find. But at this point, things like E! Online and such.
Oh, yeah. All sorts of channels and content that they're doing this. And I think we're going to see the same thing happen to content online, too. And we're going to see them come into like media center type PCs. And we're starting to see this happen more.
Well, Nielsen Net Ratings came out with some statistics. So I want to quickly run through them. Would you, Rob?
They basically found that 75% or 204 million Americans have accessed the internet from home. And I guess that doesn't really surprise me with the amount of dial-up connections and broadband connections that are out there that this is happening. And that's up from about 66% in a study that they did back in February of 2003. And that's about a 9 percentage point increase year over year. What this really is saying is that this medium is growing much faster than any other medium in history.
Another study came out last week from Pew, and that shows that people are not just using their home or their office to access the internet, basically saying 54% of people go online and from more than one place. So whether they're in the library, at their school, I mean, on the run, in a mobile thing, you know, at a hotel, it's being accessed a lot more.
It's permeating into people's lifestyles, and they're actually using computers at other locations in the libraries and mobile devices, and people that do a lot of traveling really are just using the internet a lot more. On any given day, about 27% of us use the internet to go online at least in two places, and that means that there's a lot of people that are going on in more than two places as well.
Well, we have a lot of listener emails to read this week. First one I want to dig into here is from Templeton Green. I love that name. In fact, just to put in context before I read his email, Templeton used to work at Lockheed Martin in missile development, their advanced laser optics lab in Grand Prairie, Texas. And with that background, well, something caught his eye on eBay. Templeton wrote, "With all that's occurring in the world, the last thing I expected to see on eBay was auctioning of a set of ICBM nuclear missile launch keys." So all I have to do, he says, is go to eBay and type YQZ in the search. And the first item that pops up, and this is actually as of this weekend, but and I realize it might fall off next week. The first thing that will pop up, as he says, is the doomsday keys, the keys to the end of mankind, the very keys to the gates of hell. Such small, nondescript items with unfathomable purpose. Well, I did check it out, and sure enough, there's a full story about how this General Yuri Glazkov came to acquire them. We wonder if it's authentic. I don't know. But Templeton did say he Googled General Yuri Glazkov, and he gets a lot of hits, and it seems to fit the timeline and the storyline of how he might have acquired those.
Yeah, I think this is a little bit scary. I mean, if they can put up launch code keys, but I'm sure these things don't work with anything. It's kind of a historical collector's thing, but it's really an example of how broad the spectrum of things that are sold on eBay. We also got a lot of emails this week about our discussion over the last few weeks relating to broadband over power lines, and it's created quite a stir. We've got a lot of emails pro and con about it, and Mike wrote us in regards to our March 13th show concerning broadband over power lines, and he noted that the corporation Ambient.com, which is a company that's stating that they have a possible solution to avoid this frequency problem that's plaguing broadband over power line. What they've come up with is a way to filter out the subband transmissions that are causing the interference with nearby transceivers. Actually, power line broadband modem transmitter can be programmed to avoid transmitting these subbands, or notched out is what's being termed out there, to avoid this frequency overlap that's causing this big uproar about whether or not power over broadband is going to work.
And Rob, as a counterpoint to the BPL issue, we heard from Eddie Edwards. He's a telecom engineer at the Omaha Public Power District. What did he write?
He actually was making a comment about the article that we wrote on power line broadband has arrived. He's saying that the statements that the Ambient company are saying that these signals can be filtered to avoid this problem with frequency overlap is simply not true, and that we need to do more research and ask better questions so we can write a better article, I guess. He feels that there's still big problems with broadband over power lines, and that that these companies can filter out these bad frequencies that can cause problems with other radio broadcasts out there, but we're never going to get rid of all of them. All it's going to do is cause those frequencies to shift over to other frequencies and continue to have problems, because I guess he actually works for a utility that actually tracks down noises on power lines. So he's real skeptical that they're going to be able to come up with a solution for this. And we've also invited a representative from Synergy to join us on the show. And maybe we can invite also a representative from the Ambient folks so we can talk about this a little bit more in detail with an expert.
Well, we might want to invite someone from the other point of view. Synergy and Ambient are going to be pro-BPL.
Yeah.
We might want to get all sides.
You bet.
Finally, an email from a listener that had a comment about Frank Catalano's segment last week. He talked about the dirty little secrets of blogging. He says, I do not agree on a point made on your blogger article on your website. He says, I don't think that people who make blogs have dirty little secrets. Some people make them to be in contact with friends or to keep an online diary of their work. Well, some others make them simply because they want to have a personal log. I do not disagree with the article, but would like all people to be considered when writing blogs, not just businesses. But he does concede that most people that write blogs are probably just bored teens. So thank you very much. I just wanted to say that Frank was saying that he was warning people that they shouldn't just have an expectation that their blogs can be read by millions. That's simply what he was saying. Really, there's so few people reading blogs that you just got to realize that you may only be writing it for your mom and your boyfriend.
This article created a little bit of stir online with a lot of smaller bloggers that were concerned that maybe they were being stepped on by this article and saying that what they were doing wasn't valid or important. And it still is important to blog and put your information out there and drive as much audience to your blog as you can. I think it's something that's going to last. It isn't going to go away. Like I think some of the extreme predictions have here. We're hopeful that blogs will continue and do well. And actually, we're going to have one on our site here very soon as well.
If you have something to say to us, you can write us at rob@webtalkradio.com or dana@webtalkradio.com.
Support for the show every week is provided by web.com, the most trusted name on the net. And if you're ready to get on the web, go visit web.com for domain names as low as $4.95, as web.com also offers a full-featured web hosting package for as little as $7.95, so go check them out at web.com.
And of course, our friends over at Replay Radio, we have to acknowledge them. That's replay-radio.com. They make a great little software you can try for free or purchase, and it lets you record streaming audio radio shows via your computer, kind of like a VCR. You can listen to them at any time. Check out replay-radio.com.
We're also supported by the InfoCreek.com site. They are a low-cost web design firm that builds some really cool, high-tech-looking websites. So go check them out at InfoCreek.com.
If you've ever used Google, you've likely only scratched the surface. In a moment, Nancy Blackman will share some underpublicized but valuable Google tools and searches that you'll want to start using every day. You'll be surprised, I promise.
This is Web Talk Radio.
Hey, radio lovers, you can now record thousands of radio stations, listen anywhere you want, and even fast forward over the fluff. How? With Replay Radio. It's easy to use and incredibly cool. Replay Radio turns your PC into a VCR for the radio. To listen, just use your PC, MP3 player, iPod, or car CD player. So what are you waiting for? Try a free demo right now. Visit the Replay Radio website today at replay-radio.com.
Hi, this is Rob Greenlee of Web Talk Radio. I've got a tip for you. If you're looking to register a new domain name or get a new website hosted, then support the Web Talk Radio show by visiting web.com. They have been a trusted name on the web for years and have had over 300,000 customers over the years. They specialize in domain name registrations and hosting, but they have a domain name registration as low as $4.95 per year, and that's for a yourname.web.com domain name. And they also have regular .com domain names for $6.95 per year. Web.com was recently ranked number one by tophost.com and CNET certified as being a top web hosting provider. Their hosting plans are as low as $7.95 per month, and that's even for an online e-commerce solution. So trust me, web.com is a great place to get your solution, and you can give them a call at 1-800-761-2468. That's 1-800-761-2468, or just visit them right on their website at web.com. You're back and listening to Web Talk Radio, and thank you for joining us and listening again today. My name is Rob Greenlee.
Hey, this is Dana Greenlee. Well, if you've ever used Google, you've likely only scratched the surface, surprisingly. People really love their Google for searching keywords, but wouldn't you like to learn how you can use it even more and love it even more? Like finding phone numbers or using it as a calculator or even more than that.
One of Google's biggest fans is Nancy Blackman, and she's co-author of a book called How to Do Everything with Google and runs the site GoogleGuide.com, which is full of some of the most incredible little features that you can use in Google that can really make your life a whole lot easier. She's with us right now to tell us about some of her favorites and all things Google. Nancy, it's great to have you on the show, and thank you for joining us and calling in.
Thank you for inviting me.
So what is your connection with Google? Why do you have such a passion, and what inspired you to write this book?
A friend of mine then approached me because he wanted a contact in Google. He was thinking of writing a book himself, Jerry Peek, who's author of Unix Power Tools. So he wanted to talk to Google and see whether they would help him or, you know, what sort of support they might give. And then he decided not to write that book. And I told him I was interested in co-authoring it with him when he told me about it. And then he backed out and said, well, if you want it, you can have it. So then I started writing a book.
That's good. He gave you the intellectual property rights to
this
idea.
Yeah.
But then I started writing it, and at that time there were no books on Google.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't really pleased with what I came out with, and I've written books before, and I usually teach and get feedback from students.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided I would create a website, and I would use that the material that I created in presentations that I give to people and get their feedback on it.
Oh.
And that's how I created a site called Google Guide, which is an online tutorial on Google. And at the time, I also asked some Google engineers for tips on searching, so people inside Google knew I was writing a book.
Mm-hmm.
And then Katie Connolly, who's an editor at Osborne McGraw-Hill, approached one of the engineers at Google and asked him whether he'd be interested in writing a book, Fritz Schneider. And he was looking around Google for other people that were interested in co-authoring the book with him, and some engineers told him about me. And so we decided to write the book together to divide up the work and to be able to write a book more quickly. And then he found Eric Fredrickson, who was a co-worker of his. And so the three of us wrote the book together.
Oh.
Was that your first adventure in writing a book with several people? You know, you've written about five or six books already.
I've had usually one co-author. I've written a couple of books where there's been about nine co-authors, but usually what happens is, in that particular case, the book that where there were nine co-authors, seven people wrote the book together.
Wow.
And then I was asked to write a different version of the book. There was a book on a symbolic math program called Maple, and they wanted it translated into Mathematica, and I had written books on Mathematica. So I worked on it, and I invited somebody else. So we translated the Maple book into Mathematica.
Wow.
Which is another symbolic math program.
One of the huge things that really jumped out at me when I was reading through this fairly thick book, I mean, you guys have put in a lot of information in this book, is really how much Google has done in the area of search. I mean, all of the cool tools that really probably a lot of people don't even know about. What are some of your favorite tools that they have there? And, you know, are you shocked after you got into writing this book at how many tools they really have?
I'm just really pleased that they put in so many shortcuts for finding information that I look for frequently,
yeah.
Like getting driving directions. I used to go to Yahoo Maps or MapQuest or MapBlaster and type in an address, but I had to type in the street on one line and then hit tab and then type or, you know, click my mouse and hit the city and state in another line. What I do now is I just enter the complete address into Google search box and just hit search or enter. And it gives me links to these map providers, and then I just click on the link, and my address is already fed into the map-providing programs. And I find it just saves me a couple of seconds or maybe a minute or half a minute in entering the information.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that, and I use that a lot. What I do is I copy and paste the address from if somebody sends me an invitation and says, you know, do you want to come to our party, and here is where it is, or do you want to come to my house, or do you want to go to this restaurant, you know, and this is the address. I just copy and paste the address into my search box and just hit return. And then I usually click on another button to say, I want driving directions to that location. So I use that a lot. I look up phone numbers with Google, where I just type somebody's name and their location, sometimes just a state or a city. And then if Google has the phone number in its database, then it will show me it. And I also use the calculator sometimes just to add up numbers. The calculator was recently added. I guess it was added last year.
Mm-hmm.
No, how do you find that? That's interesting. I didn't know.
You can just type in. It's a really powerful calculator for what it is. Apparently, the developer just started putting in more and more features. And the Google help page, online help, doesn't say much about what it can do. It just says, try these things. And so I decided to write a bit more extensively about what it can do. It can do conversions, like you can convert from kilograms to pounds. So if you're weighing a baby and you want to know if your doctor gives you mm-hmm. some weight in kilograms, you can convert it to pounds if you're more familiar with what are typical weights in pounds.
Yeah. So give us an example how you would actually type that in. Are you just saying, like in the case of the calculator, you just type in 1 plus 2?
Yeah.
And that's it?
Yeah, you take 1 plus 2 plus 5 plus 7 plus 9, and you can also use parentheses. So normally parentheses are ignored in mm-hmm. your search if you're searching on words, but parentheses in the calculator are not ignored. They're interpreted standardly in mathematics. So when you put parentheses around it, give it higher precedence. Mm-hmm. So it'll do that calculation first that you put in parentheses.
And again, the conversion, how do you type in the search field to get a conversion from pounds to kilograms or whatever?
Let me look at it, but I think you say, 22 pounds in kg or in kilograms, whatever you want.
Oh, wow. Oh.
It's really easy. Like, Google makes things pretty intuitive. Once you learn them, you say, oh, of course.
Yeah, well, that makes sense to actually do it that way, and it's only amazing that they've built these capabilities into the regular search box, and it seems like that they do that with a lot of other things, too. Can you tell us about some of the other tools that that are available just through the regular search box?
Yeah. They also do word variation, which means that if you type in, let's say, child bicycle helmet, it will show you pages that have child bicycle helmet, children's bicycle helmets, and variations of those terms that you have, which is nice because not all web pages use precisely the term that you're using. When Google first came out, it only matched your query exactly. So this is a recent addition, and Google calls this word variations or automatic stemming.
Wow.
Another thing that you can do, my favorite feature is Google Answers, and I think it's a highly underutilized service. If you are having trouble creating your query or don't have time to research something yourself, you can ask Google Answers for help. It's a paid service. But you set the price, and the price can be as little as $2.50 and mm-hmm. as much as $200. You will get assistance from a researcher, and the answers have been amazing, just really worthwhile.
What do they do? Do they actually answer the question for you, or do they give you resources that you can go to find the answer?
They might do one or the other or both.
Oh, really?
Sometimes they will look through the information. Sometimes they'll give you links that will help you with the information. They also can answer questions that can't be researched online, that are opinions. I saw people were posting saying, how can I improve my site? So I actually did that, and I was really impressed. I was saying, how can I improve Google Guide? And I had researchers looking through who do research every day on Google saying, oh, I would add this, or I would say it this way.
You know?
And I got such good information that I posted that question four times. The second time I got good information, the third time I had a copy editor copy my entire Google Guide, which took hours or days.
Wow.
And she would start, and then she would get partway through, and then she'd say, well, now it's the end of the weekend. I have a regular job, so I'll get more from me next weekend.
I hope you remembered her in your acknowledgement.
I added her to my acknowledgement.
Well,
I also gave her a big tip. I had priced that question at $25. For $25 I got Google Guide copy edited, and so I gave her a big tip.
We're getting Google search tips from Nancy Blackman. Plenty more good info yet to talk about, so stick around. This is Web Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Rob Greenlee of Web Talk Radio. I've got a tip for you. If you're looking to register a new domain name or get a new website hosted, then support the Web Talk Radio show by visiting web.com. They have been a trusted name on the web for years and have had over 300,000 customers over the years. They specialize in domain name registrations and hosting, but they have a domain name registration as low as $4.95 per year, and that's for a yourname.web.com domain name. And they also have regular .com domain names for $6.95 per year. Web.com was recently ranked number one by tophost.com and CNET certified as being a top web hosting provider. Their hosting plans are as low as $7.95 per month, and that's even for an online e-commerce solution. So trust me, Web.com is a great place to get your solution, and you can give them a call at 1-800-761-2468. That's 1-800-761-2468, or just visit them right on their website at web.com. You're back and connected to Web Talk Radio, and I'm Rob Greenlee, and Dana Greenlee's here. Nancy Blackman, co-author of How to Do Everything with Google, is on the phone sharing her thoughts on Google and all their cool tips.
Well, you know, and I just have to mention, you have been a Stanford University professor, and I know that there has been a bit of a controversy over students using the internet to basically write their papers and stuff. But here you are saying this is a great way to do your research or have someone else do your research. How do you feel, really, with those two opposites?
It depends on why you're doing it. If you're doing it for a class, then somebody's testing your knowledge of the material. I'm not doing Google Guide for a class. I'm doing it to help people learn Google better.
Yeah, exactly.
I want expertise from people who spend their days searching. I spend part of my day searching, but I know that I don't know everything about Google, and I appreciate the experience of people whose job is to search. And I welcome tips, and I'm glad to acknowledge them in my acknowledgement.
Yeah, it's a fascinating thing. This is almost like it's a profession to be a Google searcher, which is kind of an interesting way of looking at it.
One thing that I hadn't mentioned before is I put my Google Guide under a Creative Commons license. So what I'm doing is making this tutorial available. Creative Commons license is sort of like a copyright, but you can put certain restrictions on it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can set three parameters. The first is attribution. You say whether people can copy it, do they need to give you attribution or not? The second is, can they use it for commercial or non-commercial purposes? And the third is, can they make derivative works out of it?
Mm, okay.
And I allow people to copy it, providing they give me attribution. I don't allow commercial works to be made from it unless you get my permission. And the third is, you can make derivative works from it. So I'm basically giving my tutorial to people who want to take it and spread the word out about how to use Google.
Very nice.
Yeah, I think that's great.
And it is being used in schools because, you know, schools look for good materials, and then schools can add to the material and improve upon it.
One of the other things that's really new to Google, but it's really cool, is their alert system, where you can actually go in and enter a search query and they'll actually send you results on a daily basis.
Yeah, I use that. I find it difficult to keep up with the news, and so I use Google News Alert to send me email about news articles appearing on the web. So I want to keep up with what's new in Google. I've created a news alert about Google. So every time there's a news story about Google, I get sent email. But except I don't want to be sent all the time news stories, because there's a lot of news stories.
Yeah.
So I actually am sent once a day a news stories about Google. And I found a third-party application that does a similar thing to Google News Alerts, but I actually like it better because it's more flexible. It's called Google Alert. It's www.googlealert.com. And there you can have multiple queries running, and you can have it send you with more variability. So I have it sending me every other day instead of every day news stories about different things. And I've created several queries about when my book is mentioned, when my online tutorial is mentioned, when I'm mentioned, to find out, you know, when there's stories about me. And so I don't have to log into Google every day to find this out.
I just love Google, and I know so many people do, and there's this huge buzz now with them, particularly with doing their little IPO possible roadshow thing. Why do you think Google has really elicited such an excitement with people? What's your opinion?
They just return great results. The reasons why I use Google, really relevant results. I don't have to be paging through lots of results. It's really easy to use. It's fast. It has a clean, simple interface. It doesn't place sponsored links in its search results. It distinguishes ads from search results. It shows you an excerpt of the text that matches your queries. So you might even find the answer without going to the page where your search terms are included. And the company seems ethical. They have lots of information. I mean, they know what queries people are running. But I don't feel that they're abusing that information.
Mm-hmm.
They say they're using the information in aggregate, and I believe them. You know, having met people at the company, I believe they really think about what should we do, what's the right thing to do, and they're not looking how can we make the most money. So, like, for their ads, we can see ads, and sometimes advertisers want to pay a lot to get the top listing. They think, we want to provide the ads that our users will find most relevant to them, and we'll make people bid with their money and with their click-through rate. And that way, they get relevant ads, not just the most money. And I think that other companies just place ads. If a company pays a lot for their ad, they'll put the ad up at the top.
Yeah.
Google does not do that. When I click on ads, I find them really helpful. Like, the ads are just great ads, and I would encourage you to click on ads if you haven't already done so.
Mm-hmm.
I'm impressed with the ads. Google rewards advertisers that have high click-through rates. I've found that I'm running ads right now for Google Guide. They'll show my ad more times if the ad gets a high click-through.
And, of course, you mentioned how they're ethical. I think they're generous, too, because they have that basically revenue sharing of Google AdSense so that content providers on the web can get some revenue from
the I find
ads.
That nice, too. Yeah. I feel like here I am paying money to Google, but I'm getting money back. And it's nice that I'm using the money that I generate to buy more ads.
Sure, that certainly is a plus for what they're doing. Also, Google is one of the last holdouts for natural listings for free, because it seems like most of, you know, Yahoo, some of these other search engines are starting to charge for their paid inclusion. So you can't even get in the database unless you pay them. And Google's the last holdout for that. I'm wondering if Google is going to be able to maintain that over time. I mean, it seems to be really ingrained in their culture is to maintain the natural listings there, the free listings as the primary focal point. But boy, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of pressure on them to try and monetize that area.
I think that they realize that if they do the right thing, advertisers will want to come to them. I mean, that's what's already happening. They limit the number of ads to 8.
Yeah.
So certain keywords are just getting bid way up, and they're getting lots of money from those ads. So they are getting rewarded for doing the right thing. They are able to monetize that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm surprised that other search engine companies don't see that.
Yeah.
You know, I think that Google will continue to benefit, but, you know, time will tell.
Talk about your top 10 favorite search tips.
The tips that I have on how to create a effective search is use words that are likely to appear on the pages that you want.
Mm-hmm.
Google looks for pages that match your search terms approximately or exactly. Be specific. Use more query terms to narrow your results.
Mm-hmm.
I think some people's problems is they just use very few words, and so Google guesses what they want, but it may not be what you want. So, you know, just be very specific. But be brief. The more words you want, the more limiting your search is. If you say, I want programs that to get over smoking cigarette addiction, you know, there may be a shorter way to say that. You might not find a web page that has all those terms on it. But one thing that you don't have to do is you don't have to correct your spelling. There's a good chance that Google will recognize your mistakes and suggest alternative, more common spellings
mm-hmm.
faster than you can look up the term on an online dictionary. So, you know, if your spelling isn't terribly good, you can try to see whether Google can suggest something better.
You know, I've had this Google desk bar that stays sort of always on down in your desk bar area, the page. And I always use that to test my spelling because it doesn't interrupt what you're doing at all.
Oh, neat.
And it's terrific. So that's a valuable tip.
I think you should put that in.
Oh, yeah, we will.
Okay. I think the desk bar and the toolbar are wonderful utilities, provided you're using certain recent versions of Internet Explorer. I'd highly recommend that you use those, because they make searching so much easier and they give you additional information. Like with Toolbar, you can actually highlight your search terms or select the highlight button to highlight search terms on a page. And it doesn't even have to be a page that you found using Google. It can be on any page.
Wow.
One of my co-authors was the lead developer of the Toolbar. It was his initial project at Google.
Oh.
And he said it was assigned to him to sort of get him on board at Google. And then it became such a big assignment, it became his, you know, assignment. And then he was working on it ever since. And my other co-author joined that project and worked with him on it.
Oh, that's
And that's great. How they knew each other.
Oh, that's great. That, you know, the toolbar guys.
Yeah. And other capabilities that I think are useful in searching are quote. If you're looking up a phrase, a proper name, put quotes around it, and Google will look for pages that have the search terms, exactly the search terms, and in that specific order. So it's good for looking up names and phrases. And otherwise, Google just looks for the terms anywhere on the page. It'll give precedence to pages that have your search terms close together, but it'll show you pages, or it'll return pages that don't necessarily have them together.
There's certainly all sorts of little tricks that you can use to get different results from actually the exact same keyword that you enter there. I know I've even heard that if you enter in keywords in there twice, it'll give you a different search result than just entering in there once, and it'll actually help refine that.
I would check where Google Guide was listed in my search results periodically. And one time I typed Google Guide, and I was fairly high up. But then another time, my finger slipped, and I hit the plus sign, and I typed Google plus Guide,
mm-hmm.
and Google Guide was listed higher in the search results, and I thought, what's going on here? And it turns out if you have a plus sign in front of a word, Google will match that word after the plus sign exactly it won't do variations of that search term. So when I typed Google Guide, it had looked for pages that had Google Guide, Google Guides, but when I typed the plus sign, it only looked for pages that had Google Guide, and my page was the top listing one in that case.
Wow.
Google ignores certain words called stop words, like the and la, very common words that don't add to your search results typically, but sometimes you want that word in, like if you're looking up the who. Google actually ignores the and who because they're so common.
Mm-hmm.
You might want the included because it's part of the name, and in that case you might put a plus sign in front or put quotes around the terms. And you can also use minus signs when you want certain terms to be excluded from your results.
We're in the middle of a chat with Nancy Blackman, co-author of How to Do Everything with Google. More with Nancy in a moment. This is Web Talk Radio.
We are Samurai, the keyboard cowboys.
Hey, radio lovers, you can now record thousands of radio stations, listen anywhere you want, and even fast forward over the fluff. How? With Replay Radio. It's easy to use and incredibly cool. Replay Radio turns your PC into a VCR for the radio. To listen, just use your PC, MP3 player, iPod, or car CD player. So what are you waiting for? Try a free demo right now. Visit the Replay Radio website today at replay-radio.com.
Break it down.
You're plugged into Web Talk Radio. Nancy Blackman is still here talking about her book, How to Do Everything with Google, and her insights into this popular search engine. There's been a lot of desire, I think, online for search engines to move towards more of a kind of a natural language search. And I think that relates back to what you were just talking about how Google excludes certain non-meaning words like the and to and those kind of things. Do you see them kind of moving into more of a natural language search?
I wouldn't be surprised if they get into more natural language search, but mm-hmm. I haven't seen it so far, but it seems to be a sensible thing for them to do next. So it wouldn't surprise me. Google is sort of like they have a lot of people working on projects within the company, so there's lots of things going on. Lots of developers working on their own projects, and Google makes some of them available through Google Labs, so you can see what prototypes they're testing, what things they're trying out. And I believe that they're trying out loads and loads of things, and we just see a small fraction of the things that they've developed.
Mm-hmm.
Some are in the process of being developed, so I wouldn't be surprised if they have a natural language project. You can look at their jobs listing and see kind of what types of engineers they're looking for.
Yeah, that's always a good sign. Yeah, I agree.
And I've come across, I don't know whether I've come across natural language search, but I've come across things that they're looking for that give me an inkling that they're doing a lot of different types of work. Like they said, if you look at machine learning, it looks like they're trying to do that. They're looking for engineers that have machine learning experience.
They seem to also be moving more towards location-based search.
Well, they just announced, I believe that they just announced that today. I saw it in today's newspaper, in the San Jose Mercury News, that they've had a location-based search on their demo site.
Mm-hmm.
I just read in today's paper that they made that available in their regular search.
Oh, really?
And now you can search for local listings using local.google.com.
Google has got to be working on multimedia search, with Singing Fish being purchased by the folks on the East Coast at AOL. Do you see Google moving into multimedia search, searching streaming files?
I see them trying everything. And if they can do it well, they will do it. And if they can't do it well, they'll work on it some more.
Mm-hmm.
I see them hiring really bright people and trying different things. I'm impressed when I visit the company and see who they've hired. They've hired all the best people that have worked at companies that I've worked for before, or that I've heard, people that I've heard about are working at Google. It seems that there's lots of people that are very capable from Bell Labs, from Microsoft, have gone to Google.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They've left Microsoft to go to Google. Interesting.
A few. I mean, sure. It's a few that I know. I can't say that there's been a lot that have jumped over.
I think you've probably seen the cover of Wired magazine with the the talk about Google and
Google mania.
Some people are a little concerned that once it become a public company, all the sort of the guys that were there at the beginning get guys and girls that were there at the beginning will get pushed out over corporate management that will come in. But from what you can hear and from your connections at Google, is there a buzz that people are worried about that?
I don't believe so.
That's good.
The founders just seem really excited about what they've done, and I don't see them stepping aside. And they own a fair percentage of the company, so I don't know that they can get voted out. Their hiring process, they tend to hire people that are similar to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that they'll stay there for a while. And they're young, so you know mm-hmm. they're not going to retire soon. I mean, they may retire because they've had enough of it, but when I meet them, they just seem excited. The founders, and there's a lot of people who are very excited, and I see some people deciding that they've is nice working there, and they want to move on to something else.
Well, yeah, and I'm sure once the IPO happens, then there's a liquidity event, and people start getting cash out of their stock that they have, and I think over time, and I think Microsoft saw this too, is that people started to leave the company to start their own companies.
But I think that we'll see other companies coming about with people that have worked together that have enjoyed working together and that have ideas that may, you know, piggyback onto Google.
Yeah, and start other companies that are, you know, that are doing something that's maybe more creative or, you know, and so this whole thing just spreads and becomes much bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy, I know that we talked earlier about the Google toolbar and, of course, your close affiliations with the engineers that put that one together. Now, a big part of, I know, among the web development community of that Google toolbar is the PageRank listings, where you see the little bar that has a little green covered in to rank the website that you're looking at, how, I guess, relevant it is in Google, where it's listed. And everybody is striving to get ranked highly. Now, mm-hmm. I'm interested from what you've picked up in talking to the engineers and just from your experience. Is this an important thing that Google will want to continue, or are they thinking it's being used for evil?
You know, displaying the page rank is helping people realize how they're ranked. Google changes their ranking algorithm periodically so that people that are spamming or trying to get ranked that really aren't highly relevant don't get in there. So mm-hmm. you can see that the rankings sort of change over time because they're trying to stay ahead of those that are trying to misuse their ranking system.
Yeah.
So I think that Google will continue to modify how they rank things just so that people can't try to outdo their system. Their system is meant to get the most relevant documents.
Mm-hmm.
And if people are getting their way in because they're telling their friends to link to their pages, that's defeating the whole purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So they recognize that they want to get the most relevant results, and there's going to be people trying to figure their system out.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to try to stay ahead of those people. And so they actually sometimes blackmail or take people off that are abusing mm-hmm. the system that have invisible text, that isn't shown on the page. So they will penalize somebody that have trapdoors that lead you to do a different site. So I'm glad to see them do that. But it also gets scary, like, well, I do something that upsets them that I didn't mean to do, that I just did it, innocently.
Yeah. Well, as they tighten the rules around PageRank, there's probably more danger that people that just did stuff by accident are going to get penalized for it. But I guess that's just the risks of doing this.
Mm-hmm. So I try to be very careful not to do something that I think is the wrong thing to do.
Sure.
And I try to make my site very, very useful, just so they'll get highly ranked, so that lots of people will link to it, lots of people will click through to it, and I hope that other web developers will do the same.
Many people are concerned about privacy as it relates to Google and what they're doing, like with phone numbers and address lookups and things like that. Can you tell our listeners how an individual might make a request of Google to maybe have that information removed if they feel like there's too much personal information that's being
If you don't want your phone number listed and you look up yourself and it is listed, you can remove your name by going to www.google.com/help/pbremoval.html. Now, that's a bit long, and I don't usually give web addresses, so I'm going to give you search terms that will find that web page. If you just say, remove phone number Google, you'll find that page.
There you go. Natural search, right? Natural language search.
So for the most part in my tutorial, I give web addresses, but often you can find things just by searching for it and searching for it with terms that seem relevant to what you're searching for. Or you can go to Google Guide and go to the page on phone book, and at one of my exercises is how to remove your name.
Also, there's been some discussion that Google may be dropping its directory portion. Are you hearing anything about
that? Yeah, I heard rumors, and I just saw an article earlier this week saying that the entries have been updated.
Oh, that's good news.
Said that Google has been updating the directory listings. So I also thought that they were going to drop the directory listings, but now it appears that they're not. You know, that maybe they're trying to liven it up to get rid of the stale listings.
Yeah, I'm wondering about it, you know, really what the value of that directory, when you start looking at really how Google is used, I just wonder what the value.
Well, there's two different ways you can, or at least two different ways, well, actually three primary ways you can search. You can search, you can browse, and you can just crawl the web. And many people use Google for searching. The directory is wonderful for browsing, for getting in a topic area. If you don't know what words to use when you're doing a search, consider using the directory to explore down, to go down categories. It's sort of like a card catalog. You click on a topic, and then you see subtopics. Then you click on subtopics and get down deeper and deeper, where you don't have to think of the search term, and you can see what information is out there. Unfortunately, it doesn't have as much information, not as much information has been put in the directory as in Google's search, web search. So not as much information is out there, but all the information that is out there has been checked out by somebody, by one of these volunteers.
Yeah.
And so it tends to be high quality. Mm-hmm. There just isn't as much.
Mm-hmm.
And it tends to be a little bit inconsistent depending on who checked it out. Some of the volunteers are more thorough about checking out in their area. There may be more volunteers working in one area than in another area. So you'll find inconsistency in the depth and the breadth of the entries in the directory.
Nancy, it's needless to say, we could talk about Google for not just hours, but days.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about with
all this. All that information in your book, I mean, we could just have you on again, and I hope to do that. But let's talk a minute about your book in our last minute that we have. Tell us about anything you have planned and, of course, where we can find it. I know we can find it on several online stores.
Yeah, you can find it on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and you can find it at your local bookstore. It's published by Osborne McGraw-Hill, and I think they make it available at most bookstores. If your bookstore isn't carrying it, you can ask them to order it.
And, of course, just go to googleguide.com.
Yeah, and googleguide.com, it has slightly different information than the book. The book is much more detailed and has little anecdotes about the development of different features. So you'll find that they're really different books. The Google Guide is an online tutorial with problem sets. How to Do Everything with Google is a book to read and a reference, and it's just packed with information about all the features that there are.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you for joining us on the show. It's great to speak with you.
Thanks for inviting me.
We've been talking with Nancy Blockman. She's the author of How to Do Everything with Google, and she runs googleguide.com. Well, unfortunately, another show is over of Web Talk Guys.
Bookmark us right now while you're thinking of it at WebTalkGuys.com or WebTalkRadio.com. And we're always here with about 300 hours of audio content. And anytime you need to get a little tech fix, click on our topic archive and start listening. We'll see you around the net.
Thank you for downloading the Web Talk Guys. Bookmark us now for next week. Same Web Talk Guys time, same Web Talk Guys channel.